First, we're talking today about the law. The name of the law is Law for Prevention of Damage to the State of Israel through Boycott. That is the law. We will refer it to as the anti-boycott law, but that is the official name of the law. The law actually gives damage responsibility to someone that calls for boycotting any product or any state officials or state places or the state of Israel. The law doesn't say anything regarding actually boycotting something, but you cannot call for a boycott. And in the law was presented in the 11th of July 2011, and the first draft of the law was presented in somewhere around 2010, and was signed by 25 MEMKs. Members of Knesset, from the opposition and the coalition. Some members of the Labour Party, regretfully, were also signatories of the draft of the first law. The original draft had articles relating to internationals calling for boycott, states, and other things, but that was erased from the first draft. The Knesset voted. The Knesset's legal attorney advised on the issue of this legislation that the phrasing of the term boycott over the State of Israel was too wide, and it is actually violating freedom of speech, and it's in the border or over the board the border of legality and constitutionality. What happens in this law is that the phrasing of the term boycott over the State of Israel, it is so wide that includes not only the whole State of Israel, but also boycotting, and this is the important part, boycotting any place that Israel is occupying, that is not part of Israel, but is also occupying. It has rule over it. And the right wing actually want to say regarding this is that there is no difference, or that there is no problem regarding this, because there is no difference between a resident of Ariel and a resident of Tel Aviv to boycott someone because of the place they live. In the end, the legislation passed. 47 members of Knesset in favor, and 38 members of Knesset voted against the law. Now, I presented the appeal to the Supreme Court in the name of Uri Avneri and Gush Shalom. There were other petitioners. The Coalition of Women, there was a member of Knesset, Ahmed Tibi, and other private individuals that were petitioning against the law. What we said in the court is that we thought that this new legislation was violating the right of freedom of speech. It was violating the right of equality. And the freedom of work. The different infringements that the law presented in our eyes are as following. First, we have to know that in the first draft there was also a criminal article saying that anyone that calls for a boycott will be passing a criminal offense. That was erased as well, and so the law that we petitioned against didn't carry any articles regarding criminal offenses, only punitive damages, okay, and damages, and some other administrative consequences for the calling against a boycott. We believe that the law was drafted because there was a different calls for Israeli artists not to go to act or to different places in the occupied territories, and not because of the international BDS movement. Okay, it's important to say that this law does not affect the BDS movement, because it has no jurisdiction over anyone outside of Israel calling for BDS. So we believe that the real target of the law is mainly to enable the citizens of Israel that oppose occupation and that believe that there has to be a solution regarding the Israeli-Palestinian-Israeli conflict by ending the occupation, that they are taking from us a legal and critical tool in order to fight legally against the occupation. What we say is that this legislation is infringing or violating the freedom of political speech, because there are other different kinds of boycotts. For example, you remember during the social demonstrations that Israelis were boycotting cottage cheese because of its price, or there are religious institutions that boycott the restaurants that are not kosher enough, or things like that. And that boycott is allowed, or no one has nothing to say about it, but only the boycott regarding institutions in the occupied territories or products that are being processed or sold or anything in the occupied territories, then that will be cause for paying damages. The law actually was also very harsh on the fact that it was the law that passed had also an article that said that there will also be punitive damages, that even if there is only because you call for a boycott, then you will have to pay damages, those punitive damages, even though you didn't have to prove any real damage because of the call for boycott. In the end, the Supreme Court, in a majority of 5-4, it was first. There were nine judges proceeding over the case. In the beginning, there were only three, but it was extended to nine judges, including the president of the court, and the new president of the court, Judge Nao. And five of them thought that the law was constitutional, and four of them thought it wasn't constitutional. It's important to stress that all of the nine judges stated that complete BDS against the State of Israel, that will be illegal, but the four judges that thought that the law was not constitutional because of the infringements of freedom of speech, etc., thought that it was only regarding the part of the occupied territories, not regarding Israel as a just voted in favor of keeping the law and for against it, but all the nine judges actually annulled the article regarding punitive damages. So what it means today is that although if any organization or individual calls for a boycott of products from the settlement, the person that if I call for against a specific product, I can be sued for damages, but the person suing me has to show that there is a direct link between the damage he has suffered and my call for boycotting his product. So at least we don't have punitive damages, which makes it a little bit easier on the people that want to call for boycott, but still they will have to pay if the person suing them will be able to show that there is direct linkage between both of them. And one last thing that I do want to tell you is that actually the court in itself were asking two questions. The first question was, does the new legislation infringe the right of freedom of speech and other constitutional rights? And the other question, if there is such an infringement of rights, does that infringement stand the test of the limitation clause of the basic law of human dignity and freedom? What actually the court said, or most of the judges, is that in a sense the law does violate freedom of speech, but they think that the law was proportionate it passed the test of the limitation clause in the sense that even if it infringes the right, it can still be called a constitutional law, legislation.
Thank you, Gabby. We're opening to questions, and I think the first question we have is David Abraham. David, I'm unmuting you. Can you ask your question?
Yes. So I actually, in the meantime, had typed it in. But on the scope or jurisdiction of the law, if I hear organizer call for boycott of West Bank products or places, say by name specifically, am I susceptible to a suit or service of process if I come to Israel? Does the jurisdiction of this law reach beyond actions taking place in Israel?
Okay, that's
how to open it.
Actually, the judges that accepted the legislation said that it has to be treated in a very limited way. I think that some of them at least don't feel comfortable with it, but it means that if someone, like any other offense, or if they are outside of Israel and they come to Israel, they can, maybe someone can sue them. The question, what will the courts do then? We still don't know. So if you're asking me, if like someone from outside is part of the BDS movement, or only is only calling for a specific boycott to products of the settlement, then and they come to Israel, and that information is also like maybe in the internet or whatever, is like you can say it's published in Israel, and they're here. Maybe they can actually be suited. But I don't know
so
what
that
the
would
court
be all
will do then.
Right. I mean, that would then suggest that those active in organizations like Partners for Progressive Israel, or even in J Street or whatever, who endorse boycott of West Bank products and who come to Israel on a regular basis, are subject to suit.
I think you're subject to a suit, yes. I don't know I want to be really, really careful because, again, the court says that it has to be translated into very limited possibility of suing someone. But there is a possibility that even if in the end the court says that there is no jurisdiction, the you know, Moetzet Yesha or someone will like that will try to present a suit, and then you'll have to fight in court and say why there is no jurisdiction. But in the beginning, I think that if they want to do it, maybe they will try to do that. What will the courts decide according to the very limited range that the Supreme Court has given them? I don't know. But there is a possibility that someone can be sued because of that, yes.
Thank you.
Our next question comes from Carrie Nelson. Carrie, I just unmuted you. Would you like to ask your question?
So let's say an Israeli faculty member endorses a general boycott of West Bank products. Doesn't list specific products. Should someone really be pursued for specific damages as a result of a general call for boycotts?
Made it all dirty. When it's dirty, the
That is a good question. And how do you say parshanut, Maya, in English?
Parshanut, interpretation.
Okay, that would be thank you. That would be exactly the interpretation of the Supreme Court's decision. I believe that that as Judge Meltzer pointed in his judgment, which was the longest one. The judge said that there has to be concrete linkage between the damage and the call for boycott. Okay, so if you call actually for a general boycott, I believe it will be very difficult for someone to prove that someone ended their business with a specific factor in the West Bank because of your call for boycott.
I think it would be impossible to prove it really then what remains is the possibility of nuisance suits, that is, a chilling effect on people who might want to make general calls for boycotts, and you sue them and you can't win the suit, but they have to hire a lawyer and they have to deal with expenses. So it could have a chilling effect if there were, you know, fruitless suits that weren't just automatically thrown out of court on that basis. But I can't see someone winning. Someone from SodaStreams or Sabra Hummus saying, well, you called for a boycott and, you know, our sales went down by 5%. You're vulnerable.
Battery has to touch the end of it. This plastic piece stops the battery from touching it.
Sorry, there's somebody on the line.
You're right. This whole law.
I'm sorry, Gabby. There's somebody on the line. I can't mute that person. I don't know who it is, but there's somebody who's making noise, and I can't mute him for some reason. So, yes.
So, you're right. The chilling effect of the law is exactly. I think that's the whole idea of it. You know, just of really enabling people that are against occupation or anything like to even try and talk about boycotting any occupied territory product because of what can happen. And you're right. Like Gush Shalom, for example, for many years had computer, they have all the lists of all the products in the occupied territories, and since the law was legislated, they put it down. But now we believe that they're going to put it back on again because exactly what you said, because of the very limited interpretation that has to be given to the law, and for the exact that the linkage has to be shown between the damages and your call for boycott, and your specific call for boycott.
That's very helpful.
Okay, thank you.
Charles, you wanted to ask a question?
Thank you. What I'm wondering about is, hi.
Good hi, Charles.
Good to talk to you in this company. I'm very interested in the criteria because, well, maybe we can get this a little clearer, Gabby can clarify for us. But it seems to be that it has to do with the boycott has to be on the grounds of the relationship between the entity with the state of Israel or territory under Israel's effective control. Is that still the formulation?
Yeah.
Well, then a substantive reason, for example, saying I cannot have dealings and others should not have dealings in a product that was produced on the basis of internationally unlawful legislation, legislative acts, administrative acts, whatever, using the non-recognition logic as a principled ground. So it's not saying because it's Israeli or because it's in the occupied territories. It's actually getting to the substantive principled reason for abstaining from such dealings. I don't think that the text of the law would catch that.
It's interesting, and we will have to check it. That actually, what I can say is that there are many European countries that, for example, all those countries that are asking now for a special sticker that says that it's a product from the occupied territories, that in themselves, even in economical agreements between the state of Israel and a European country, that there are some clauses regarding products from the occupied territories. And then, in those agreements, it's, you know, Israel allows for boycotting products. You know, you might say that is the conclusion of what is happening in those economical agreements. So maybe the phrasing of how you present it is, of course, like in any legal paper, you know, it depends on how you put it down. And the question is, how will the courts will interpret it?
David,
actually really need to say the word boycott, or if you use other phrasings that mean the same and that the conclusion is the same, what will the court say about it? I don't know.
David, I believe your question is next.
Okay, thanks. Hi, Gabby. Thank you for doing this really important work. I was happy to meet you in your office a little less than a year ago in Tel Aviv. First of all, regarding jurisdiction, I was told by somebody else that it only applies to Israeli citizens, and I don't know whether that was just an assumption or whether that maybe is explicit in the law, that someone who's not an Israeli citizen would not be subject to suit, or, I mean, of course, there could be a nuisance suit, but that would be thrown out easily. I wonder if you know about that. And also, my question was similar. As an Israeli citizen who's living in the United States, and there are many others, wondering whether we would, whether we're vulnerable to the lawsuit by calling for a boycott outside of the country, or whether that has to be done in Israel. Apparently, from what you said, it sounds like it could be anywhere, but I wonder whether citizenship has anything to do with it. And finally, just regarding free speech, I mean, it's mind-boggling how the court can take upon itself to limit free speech according to its content in this way. I would like to think that that couldn't possibly happen in the United States with our First Amendment, though there are, I'm as an attorney, I'm involved right now in definite attacks on free speech. They're usually a little bit roundabout and not so direct, but particularly on this issue there in Congress right now, there's trying to stick into the trade bill, anti-boycott provisions, which in my opinion are violations of free speech, and we'll see how that goes. But specifically, one last thing, the four judges who opposed it, apparently they also thought that the law was fine if it applied to a general boycott of Israel as opposed to the territories. And I'm just wondering, how can they possibly rationalize making that distinction over content limitation of free speech? It's just, it boggles my mind.
Okay, thank you. Hi, David. Thank you for your question. Regarding the jurisdiction that the law applies only to Israeli citizens, as I said before, the first draft actually had some phrasing regarding also internationals and things like that, etc. Okay, so if someone outside of Israel calls for boycott and is out of Israel, the law will not reach him there. But the phrasing of the law says nothing regarding who it applies. It's a law that applies in Israel, but not only to its citizens, but to anyone that is in Israel, like any other law. It doesn't say otherwise. So if someone, like we have all like demonstrations, an international comes to Israel and goes to a demonstration, and he or she is arrested, then you know the criminal law will apply to them. And so you can say about civil law will apply to them even more. So that means that if the call for boycott is done while the person is Israel, in Israel, then the law will apply to them. And how does it apply? How the call is made in Israel? It can be, you know, the court can phrase it or can say that if it's in the web, you know, then maybe it's in Israel. If someone in Israel can read it or can, like other, like defamation or libel and slander and things like that. Okay, because we're talking now about damage law. So it's critical to see, I don't know what they will, it's just a new piece of legislation and it's very dramatic, so I don't know how the courts will use it or what will apply it. But you know, we have to know that if someone is here and they call for boycott, the law will apply to them even if they're not here. And how, if someone called for boycott outside, only, you know, through demonstrations or through whatever, then it won't apply. But if there is something that can be tangible in Israel, then maybe the courts will say that it does apply to that person, even if he didn't call for the boycott in Israel, but, you know, through the web or whatever. So we have to be aware of that. Okay, that's one thing. Regarding the difference between the general boycott and the boycott only to the occupied territory, I first want to say that I find it amazing that all of them, that Supreme Court judges actually created a new reason. To where, you know, in Israel we don't have the same kind of constitutional law in Israel, like in the U.S. So we're all the time saying that we have different rights and that we have to balance between them, that there is no one inalienable right. And so when we have freedom of speech can retract before several things. And those things have been created by the Supreme Court, and one of them is like when there is a possibility when it will affect the security of the state or the peace. It will affect the peace of the population, and libel and slander, and calls for racism, and just, there are only several reasons why freedom of speech will retract. What is amazing of the decision of all the judges here is that they created a new reason when freedom of speech will retract before other things. And that is specifically by the five judges that they created a new right of the settlement of the settlement you know the settlement well-being. Okay, if we are going if through boycotts we're going to be jeopardize the well-being of the settlements, then freedom of speech will retract. That is amazing. That is completely unbelievable. And I don't know how they will be able to give a new constitutional decision again after doing that. And how they make the difference? They say that the four judges that actually said that they're you know that they didn't accept the legislation, they said that boycotting Israel will jeopardize the state. They don't believe that you know that calling for boycott of the settlements will jeopardize the state. You know, all of us only will maybe end the occupation, but that is. But that is not, you know, and putting an end to the state of Israel. But actually, I want to tell you that one of the people that talked in the that one of the professors that was actually cited by the Supreme Court Judge Meltzer was Gerald Steinberg. From Bar-Ilan University, regarding his studies of BDS, where he really talks at BDS. The judges actually accepted the idea that BDS will jeopardize Israeli security and things like that. That will be the difference.
Sam, you've been waiting really patiently. Would you like to ask your question?
Sure, thank you. I posted it. I don't know how much people see it on online, but I'll just restate it. The Illinois legislature is currently considering legislation that would prevent its pensions from being invested in entities that, quote, engage in actions that are intended to penalize, inflict economic harm on, or otherwise limit commercial relations with the state of Israel. Or companies based in the state of Israel, or in territories controlled by the state of Israel. Same language as in the Israeli legislation. And that the amendment that promotes this is being enthusiastically supported by the Jewish Federation here, and it's being promoted throughout the pro-Israel community. But it seems clearly parallel to the legislation that you're worried about in Israel. I wonder if you were aware of this, if anybody's working on it. It's apparently first of its kind in the U.S. It has passed the Illinois Senate 49-0, so it looks very likely to pass generally and could be the beginning of what seems to me a very dangerous parallel move over here.
Actually, no, I wasn't aware of it. I would really like to see a copy of it if it's possible. And if the phrasing is so alike. Maybe there is some kind of relationship. Who presented it? Do you know?
It was presented by a representative, Sarah Feigenholz. I will put the link to her amendment up on this list right now. I'm not a lawyer. I'm just a philosophy professor. I don't know too much detail from the background. Mostly I've heard about it from its enthusiastic supporters. It comes around in the Jewish Federation emails. If you want to send me your email address, although that can be put online, I can send you what I've received.
I will. Thank you. Okay. Thank you very much. No, I wasn't aware.
Charles, you had a follow-up question? Charles? Can you hear me?
There we go. Yes, I can hear you now, and I think I'm unmuted now. I have three short ones, actually, now from the comments. First, it's my understanding that the tort law, in other words, the civil law that Gabby is referring to, okay, if the harm was caused by an Israeli or a non-Israeli that outside of Israel, but the harm was caused to the Israeli firm in Israel. In other words, they lost a contract for a sale to France. Then it might be actionable. And then the foreigner could have action brought against him if he's physically under Israeli jurisdiction, but not if he's not. That would be my understanding. I'd like Gabby to comment on that. The second has to do with the cottage cheese example, because the cottage cheese boycott was because of what the industry was doing, not because of where it was or the fact that it was Israeli or a settlement industry or anything like that. It was the action of the industry that was provoking and justifying the boycott. So that gets back to my initial observation that it would be very interesting to test this against a boycott action that is reasoned on grounds of the wrongfulness of the activities or the wrongfulness of the basis of the production being carried out. In other words, substantive reason and not just an associative one.
Let me answer this too so I don't forget. Okay, the last question, you're right. If actually the boycott is regarding something substantial, like, for example, we find out that in a factory in the occupied territories there is no health standards. Then if you call for a boycott of this factory because of the health standards, even if it's in the occupied territories, there's no problem. Okay? It's like a cottage cheese. If I boycott the cottage cheese for its price, there's no problem. But if I boycott it because the factory is in Ariel, then I will have a problem. So that's true. To find another reason for boycotting, that is true. But that has, you know, then you take out the political edge. Maybe you're not prone to being sued, but then you take out, you know, that then you are violating your freedom of speech because you want to say why you're boycotting. But that's, and your first question, just to say, if a foreigner is not to be sued if he call for a boycott outside of Israel, even if he's in Israel, is to my understanding. There has to be a calling for boycott while you're in Israel, and maybe being in Israel is also, that it reached Israel, like through the web or things like that. But that will be a very, you know, that wouldn't be the limited interpretation of the law. That would be maybe a wider interpretation, but we have to be ready also for that kind of interpretation, or at least for the chilling effects that people will have, or that people will be sued because of that, because we know that it's not the state that will be suing, but individuals, like settlers, that will be suing. And they can sue, you know. Mostly because they will probably have a fund, a specific fund for suing, if they would want to.
Yes. So what you're saying then is, if the harm that was caused that the firm could demonstrate was a harm that was caused, that was harm visited on them from an outside, in other words, the French canceled a deal, it wouldn't be actionable.
It will be actionable only if it was not if you know just made a demonstration or you called for boycott there, but if it would be in the press, in the Israeli press, or in an ad in Israel or things like that, and you're in Israel, then
that's
I
not
think
your responsibility. But that's not your responsibility whether or not your action in France is reported in Israel.
No. I don't think so. No, not reported. If you buy an ad, okay, in the Israeli newspaper.
Yes. Okay. The final question is an intriguing one, because technically it seems to me, but correct me, Gabby, if I'm wrong, that the text would also cover Israelis advocating for a boycott of Palestinian firms or economic operators.
Yes, actually it does. Let's say that, okay, well, let's limit it for areas B and C, okay? But yes, there is no phrasing or no wording that takes a Palestinian product outside the scope of the legislation.
So technically, it's possible that a Palestinian firm, which was could claim injury or lost business as a result of Israeli advocacy of boycott. Okay, because
yes, I'm saying again, not areas A, because Israel will automatically disclaim that it has any
right.
That it's not a territory over its, you know, it's
right.
Not.
Oh, that sounds good.
Okay, thank you,
Carrie. I believe I can see that you have a question. Carrie Nelson?
It was really just a clarification. I mean, if I had a question, it would be, shall we say, a personal one, which is curiosity about how co-edited was used in the Supreme Court decision. It's a little ironic that my publication was cited four times when I'm opposed to the law. But if someone can email me at some point and tell me, someone who knows the Hebrew text, how the book, The Case Against Academic Boycotts of Israel, was.
I don't think we could hear the ending of your question. If someone who knows the Hebrew text could email you and tell you.
Someone who knows the Hebrew text of the Supreme Court decision, I'm very curious in knowing how a book that I co-edited, which has been widely reviewed in Israel, called The Case Against Academic Boycotts of Israel. I know that it was cited four times in the decision, in the Supreme Court decision, and I'm very curious how it, since I'm not a fan of the law.
I will look for it, and I will. If I get your mail, I will send it to you. Okay, no problem.
Do we have any more questions? Because our chat doesn't indicate that we don't. But are there more questions? David, I think I can.
Yes.
I can see that you're asking. Yes.
If there are no others waiting, then I do want to ask a question, because there are two strands in the opinion that come together in a way that is quite worrisome. First, I believe all but one of the justices accepted the position that Israel is under life or death threat, and that therefore freedom of speech could be restricted. Okay, so that's one part of the argument that they almost all accepted. And then five of the nine essentially said that there's no difference between the territories and Israel proper. So is the distinction between the territories and Israel proper now something that is disappearing from the jurisprudence of the court, and dangers to the territories are the same as dangers to Israel proper in the eyes of the court?
David, that's a great question. It's not only the court, but it's that I think truly that the, you know, that the long term, that the long term, tochnit program of the right is to erase the green line and to erase the difference between Israel and the occupied territories by many different ways. One of them is by creating settlements that half of them are inside of Israel and half of them are in the occupied territories, like Oranit, for example. Some other things are copying Israeli legislation into the occupied territories in order to make settlers have the same rights, although the law that applies to them is different than the law of Israel. And so many different things that are being done in order to erase the difference between the settlements and the state of Israel. And that is the long term program that of the right wing, and it's actually gaining more and more force in Israel, because there are second and third generation settlers that have been born there, and they see themselves completely as Israelis, not like pioneers or ideological settlers or anything like that. So when you have youth from, you know, from Male Adumim or whatever, they don't see themselves as, you know, as being there for ideological reasons or anything. They don't see any difference. So it is now this decision from the Supreme Court, while again erasing the difference between Israel and the occupied territories, I see it as one of the most problematic decisions of the Supreme Court. If now the right wing wants to change the way judges are being elected in order to bring more right wing judges to the court, they don't need it anymore. It's happening.
Do we have any more questions? Shirley, would you like
I
to
have
ask?
A quickie.
Oh, sorry.
A quickie. It would be very tempting to me, because I'm not, in my awareness, even the crudest BDS calls explain their call for boycott by connecting it with some attributed wrongdoing of the boycotter, the boycotted party. So it might actually work out rather interestingly if somebody did bring an action. Okay. And it was settled that indeed nobody was calling actually for a boycott simply because of the nationality or the relation to territory of the entity being boycotted. It might mean that the law would be shown to have almost significance, except it's kind of a blunderbuss, major political act of legislation with no effect. So maybe the club should be called.
Just tell me what time you're in.
Yes, Charles, but you know, as we know,
okay.
you might be right. But again, the question is regarding the chilling effect. How many people are going to be afraid of calling for boycotts because they're afraid to be sued?
But how to defeat it is the question. I'm talking
how
about
how to say what?
I'm talking about a tactic to defeat it. I'm not talking about it that it isn't a bad thing. I'm saying the tactic to defeat it can be very perhaps effective and score a very important point as well.
I think that we still have to to talk, that will be an important point when we start talking about tactics. How do we do it? And that will be a very important point.
Gabby, thank you very, very much for your time. And I have to say, I'm amazed at how well you managed to deal with the subject and your children at the same time. I'm impressed. Next on our series about Israel's democracy, a conversation with Dan-Marie Dorr on Wednesday, May 13th. This should be an intriguing and stimulating conversation, since Marie Dorr, who is a Likud prince, has declared before the election that he would not vote for the Likud because of what the government was doing to Israel's democracy. Once again, this program is brought to you by the support of partners like you. Your donations allow Partners for Progressive Israel to bring to you the most interesting speakers. Consider donating to Partners for Progressive Israel. Thank you very, very much for your participation and for your patience with the technical difficulties at the beginning. And thank you, Gabby. And
thank you. Thank you very much. It's important for me to hear that we have supporters outside. It's really, really important. Thank you so much.